From UFOs to ghosts and government cover-ups, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Stuff They Don't Want You to Know audio show. I'm Ben Bolin.
And I'm Matt Frederick.
Matt, today we are going to do a little introduction to something that we often mention in our videos, but we don't get enough time to really explain, right?
Yeah, sure. We're talking about something that is large, fairly old, not that old, and important.
Yeah. So who could that be? Is that a person? Is it Wilford Brimley?
I believe it is a thing.
It would
make it a thing. Or let's say an agency.
Ah, yes, an agency. What we are talking about today, ladies and gentlemen, is DARPA, the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. This is, no fooling, real life, mad science, paid for by U.S. taxpayers.
This is the closest thing you'll ever get to the fringe division. That's real.
That's a really good comparison. And this also, you mentioned the history there, Matt. It's surprisingly old.
It is.
At least for me.
Well, can we get into kind of the history of it, or do you want to explain more about what it is?
Let's jump right into the history.
Okay, so if you want to know about the history of DARPA, you have to look at an agency called ARPA, which is the same as DARPA, just take off that defense from the front of it, the Advanced Research Projects Agency. And it's a Cold War creation, something that came out of kind of the fear of the Soviet Union's power, especially after they launched Sputnik in 1957.
At this time, the Department of Defense was very concerned that there might be a weapon gap, a technology gap in the Cold War.
And there was. There absolutely was. They successfully launched a satellite before we did, and it was seen as a massive threat. So one of the first things that ARPA looked at was getting man into space, or at least American man into space. And also putting satellites up of our own so that we could monitor what the Soviet Union was doing up there as well as on the ground.
And we have, just to dovetail on that, we have some more information about that in one of our Friday videos that features the role of secret satellites during the Cold War, right?
Oh, yes, we do.
And so DARPA was created with this idea, or excuse me, ARPA, later to become DARPA in 1958, was created with this idea that the United States should always endeavor to have a technological edge over friend and foe.
Yeah, superiority, they called it.
Yeah. So it's weird because this kind of mandate also makes it a bit different in comparison to other government agencies. Like, if you think of other government agencies, the EPA, the FDA, a bunch of other acronyms that end with A, they operate in a much more top-down style, and they're much larger than DARPA. It's weird because for all the mentions that we hear about DARPA in the world of theories and also the world of frightening technology of the future, DARPA is actually kind of small.
Yeah, it's fairly small. I don't have numbers on that. Do you have numbers about actual employees? Well, confirmed employees?
See, I'm glad you said that. We don't. And actually, no one in the public is going to have a number that everyone agrees on. And that's because DARPA does a lot of subcontracting, right? And DARPA also has some classifications that don't really lend themselves to any sort of public information. So I guess at this point we should go ahead and make it clear. DARPA started with satellites and with the moon missions, right?
Which then split off into NASA and the NRO, the National Reconnaissance Office. And then they had to focus on different things. And one of the main things they were focusing on was information technology. And that's, again, if we want to kind of continue with kind of the things we've been talking about lately, especially on our show.
Yeah.
They created the ARPANET in I think the contract was awarded in 1969.
And ARPANET. Well, that might sound kind of familiar to some people. Matt, what is ARPANET?
ARPANET is kind of the zygote of the internet that then
I like that.
It then created the web, the internet and the web and all of the things that we use now online. Mm. It was just the first networking of computers. It's the first time it ever happened. A lot of people thought it couldn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
But thankfully, the people at BBN, Bolt, Bernack, and Newman decided they could do it. They sent in a largely detailed proposal, mm-hmm. and they got the contract. And then that was in 1969. And then in 1976, they had the first wireless transmission. So they jumped from 1969 to figuring out how to network computers by a landline
mm-hmm.
to just, 7 years later, then they've got the first wireless transmission.
Right.
And when you think about in 1976 that there was wireless communication occurring, mm-hmm. that's hard to think about because around, I don't even know exactly what time that came around for consumers.
Oh, yeah. A vast swath of the world still does not have that technology. And so that's amazing, but it's not just the internet. And Matt, stop me if I start to sound as though I'm making an infomercial for DARPA. No problem. But these guys are into a lot of stuff, right? On another How Stuff Works show, we've covered something called the DARPA Urban Challenge, which is an annual competition to create an autonomous vehicle, you know, like the Google car. And, the DARPA Urban Challenge, is a multifaceted competition. There are teams from private entities, there are teams, a lot of teams from universities, and they try to build the software necessary to create a car that can go through the open road and then also navigate treacherous urban environments. And they've had a lot of success. This is one of the key examples of DARPA's MO when it works out. And DARPA's MO is to fund other research agencies.
Yeah, to put out a call mm-hmm. for a technology that doesn't necessarily exist yet, an extrapolation on current technology, and then whoever can do it the best mm-hmm. gets a contract from them through the government, and then they get to do it.
Yeah, true story. DARPA has no publicly acknowledged laboratories or scientists of its own. They have program managers who sort of farm out this research, and there's a lot of research. Oh, man. I am trying so hard right now not to bring up my absolute favorite hobby horse of DARPA. Should I do it now or should we wait? Man.
Well, let's get into it. I want to hear.
Okay. Thank you. The TDCS devices.
Oh, man. You're hung up on this.
I am hung up. I am so hung up on it. The technology is there. One of DARPA's huge drives is to make a soldier of the future, right? Not necessarily human, but still integrating human beings, human brains, and technological advances. So they've found this thing called, or they didn't find it, but they've started using a thing called TDCS, transcranial direct current simulation. Anybody who's watched our video shows knows that I am indeed hung up on this. Mm-hmm. So just a quick recap. The idea is that through low-level electrical stimulation of specific parts of the brain, we can not only improve somebody's learning ability, we can also improve their memory retention and a couple of other neat mental tricks. And what's more, this change stays with you after the exposure. DARPA is using this to train snipers, to research pilot training time. It's a brave new world.
Yikes. And Are you trying to do some of this on your own, Ben? Are you doing a little research? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I am fully on board with this. The technology is maybe dangerous, but it's relatively simple to build. Now, I think at this point, Matt, you and I should do a COA and say we are not telling anyone to build it.
Certainly not. But if you want to know more about it, watch our Deceptive Brain series, episode 3.
Yeah.
And but don't do it yourself.
And don't tell people that we told you to do it. We just say that it's interesting. And that's not all DARPA's doing. Do you have any particular projects of DARPA that you're interested in?
I do, but I'm going to kind of take it back to the history again fast.
Yeah.
Something that really fascinated me, again, that we can extrapolate upon. So they came up with this thing during the Gulf War, the first invasion of Iraq by the United States.
Desert Fox?
I think it was Desert Storm, correct. And it's called SimNet. And that was the first time they started using their networked computers to create an actual real-world war simulation of one of the battles, the Battle of 73 Easting. And it was one of the last major tank battles that has occurred in the world.
Wow.
And it was essentially a video game. Like, think of Battlefield or Arma or, I don't know, Command and Conquer, kind of, in a way, also.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really interesting to me because this was the first time using this kind of technology to do this. And the defense secretary at the time, Dick Cheney, was extremely interested in this kind of war simulation. And he pushed to have a lot more of this. And it makes me think about the video games of today and whether or not they are war simulators, but are we, let me ask you this.
Okay.
Are we teaching our children, including myself in this category, to be combat warriors through all these different types of video games, with the top-down strategy war games, with the first-person shooter war games and the tank simulators?
Sure. Or how far are we from the first drone simulator game?
Yeah. Right? And Ender's Game. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
I mean,
exactly.
The kids who think they're playing a game, but they're actually bombing people with Predator drones.
Spoiler alert.
sorry.
The book's been out for a while, and that is a very good point. Like, where's the threshold? At what point does it move from being a game to being something that is clearly training? I like that question, very much. I also think it's important when we go to DARPA as a subject, Matt, we run into a lot of rumors, a lot of disconcerting facts.
Most definitely.
If you, like us, are a little bit weirded out by some of the amazing improvements in robotics, then DARPA is your go-to for a sleepless night.
Yeah, speaking about improving the human, not only the brain, but good golly, some of those... Wow, did I say good golly? Good golly. Some of those, the exoskeletons that are being produced, some of the innovations in nanotechnology that they're coming out with.
Bionic prosthetics, that actually do have the ability to relay sensations, heat, cold, pain.
There's a lot of interesting and, quite frankly, frightening things that they're coming up with.
Yeah, and this is just the stuff that we know about, that is publicly acknowledged. Now, DARPA is a little more open than some areas of the U.S. government, like the NSA, for example. You can actually go to DARPA's website and see their requests for proposals, and see what opportunities they have for you, your agency, or your crew of local mad scientists to, get that mad science really cooking with gas.
Ben, I hate to do this. I'm so sorry, man. I liked where you were going there, by the way. But the light is flashing. That means we've got to get out of here. Somebody else needs to use the studio.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, hey, what about this, Matt? What if we make this a two-parter?
Oh, that's a great idea.
Because we're nowhere near done.
No, not at all. We have so much more to cover.
So stay tuned to hear the conclusion of our two-part series on DARPA. In the meantime, let us know what you think about the United States Real Life Mad Science Department. You can drop us a line on Facebook, right, Matt?
Yeah, we're Conspiracy Stuff. You can also find us on Twitter. We're at Conspiracy Stuff. Or you can send us an email. We are conspiracy@discovery.com.
For more on this topic and other unexplained phenomena, visit testtube.com/conspiracy stuff. You can also get in touch on Twitter at the handle @conspiracy stuff.